Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
So what was on the menu? Seven steaks? Two whole chickens?
I went and got a giant Wagyu steak for him.
So I'm ecstatic about that.
On 95.7 The Game.
I don't know if we'll ever hear Nick Bosa's monotone voice change, Dibs, but he has said that he's going to be more of a vocal leader for the team this year, so we'll see what that sounds like.
Well, he has to be, because as we've mentioned throughout the show and throughout the week, he's playing with a bunch of pups now, and a lot of guys who will not have the experience that he has defensively in that huddle and on that group. And Fred Warner's got the green dot, so he'll be the vocal leader in the huddle, but you know, Nick Bosa and that defensive line group, he and Huff are going to be the real old men of the group. There are going to be a lot of guys up there next to him, with him, on the other side, who are brand new to the league or super green. So, yeah, it's time for him to step up and be that vocal leader.
A little scary, but it's also really exciting, because you kind of just have a bunch of unknowns, and some of those unknowns could ultimately become... Like, I mean, you don't expect anyone to be the next Fred Warner, but there was a point when Fred Warner was just a third-round pick out of BYU, and no one knew who the hell he was. I think he played safety at BYU. Now he's the best linebacker in the NFL and has been for, like, 5 years. So, you know, maybe there's a similar trajectory for one or two of these youngsters on the Niners' defense. Only time will tell, but Nick Bosa, of course, is going to be one of the leaders for that. We've been talking a lot about the Niners, and we will get back to the Niners. We had Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard, the TK Show. He joined us in the 3 o'clock hour. We're going to let you hear a big chunk of that coming up in just a little bit, right around 5:05 or so. So stay tuned if you want to hear that. That's coming up in just a little bit. But until then, Dibs, I figured we should switch gears just a little bit, because there has been developments, if you want to call it that, in the Jonathan Kuminga conundrum, as we've been calling it. I think the best way to go about this and to get you the full context of everything is first read you a report that Anthony Slater wrote all the way back in October of last year, just before the season was beginning. And this, at the time, on The Athletic. Anthony Slater recently moved over to ESPN. Congrats to Slater. But this was Anthony Slater in The Athletic last offseason, before the season began. He wrote, quote, "It's possible Kuminga would have accepted a contract below max value, but the Warriors never upped their offer, somewhere near the 30-ish million per year range, into an appealing enough ballpark. So the two sides plan to let Kuminga's fourth season play out before revisiting his future." The key line there, Dibs, is the Warriors never upped their offer, somewhere near the 30-ish million dollar per year range. Okay, that's what Slater wrote. That has kind of been a key talking point as it relates to this Kuminga conversation ever since. And over the last like couple of weeks, it's kind of come back to the forefront of the conversation, to the point, Dibs, where Jonathan Kuminga's agent, his name is Aaron Turner, felt compelled enough to take to Twitter to dispel these rumors. And not as if he's just tweeted this on his own into the ether. And no, he responded to a random person on Twitter who didn't even at him. He didn't even mention Aaron Turner, Kuminga's agent. It's just a fan Twitter account who essentially asks, "Should we believe the Warriors were irresponsible enough to offer JK $30 million a year?" And Aaron Turner, and you can look this up as of a couple of hours ago. I know it was still up. It's at arockturner20. That's his handle. It is indeed him. He writes, "No one on our side was turning down $30 million a year. Our camp is smarter than that. Narrative makes no sense. Twisted up Slater's words, I think. Hashtag fake news."
Okay.
That was from Kuminga's agent yesterday.
And it comes out yesterday as opposed to, I don't know, a month ago or 2 months ago or whenever that false narrative was first put out there. And you just read the Anthony Slater piece from last October.
Yes.
So we're now basically almost 10 months removed from that report, and yet it wasn't refuted then, and it's only being refuted now that he remains unsigned, and he's sitting there with an offer, restricted free agent qualifying offer of $7.9 million that he's not readily eager to sign, it seems. And at the same time, you had Shams Charania, who was out there at Kuminga's workout today.
Yeah, I think in Florida somewhere.
In Miami. I believe Miami is where it happened. And, you know, I don't know if you have the Shams sound.
I do.
And when you play it, I guess I will unearth my pet peeve after that. It's not a huge one, but it's just a little bit annoying.
Okay, Shams on ESPN, NBA Today on ESPN. Here's what he had to say. His update, his big update on the Jonathan Kuminga situation. Here it is.
The Warriors' entire offseason has been essentially on pause for one player, and that's the restricted free agent Jonathan Kuminga. And they have wanted to figure out his situation before making their other offseason moves. And so I saw Jonathan Kuminga this morning at a workout in Miami. He's in good spirits. He had a good workout. He did tell me, though, that he is in absolutely no rush on doing a deal with the Warriors right now, and he's not accepting their current offers. He added that he wants to continue to explore options with his agent, Aaron Turner, whether that's continuing conversations with the Warriors, but also sign and trade options that are available to him in the marketplace.
What's your pet peeve, Dibs?
And it was a good workout.
That's exactly what I thought.
I mean, it's almost as annoying as, you know, he underwent successful surgery. And I know that not every surgery is successful. Shout out Steve Kerr and his botched back surgery, which was not a successful surgery. And I hate to bring that up because it cost him a long, long time of discomfort and headaches and all the rest of it. But, you know, Shams, and it was a good workout. Do we ever hear that a player had a bad workout? You know, I was at Jonathan Kuminga's workout today, and I'll tell you what, he looked lazy, slow, disinterested, couldn't shoot, couldn't dribble. It was a bad workout. It never comes out like that. So, I mean, do we even have to, I don't know, mention that it was a good workout?
It's like draft night analysis. Oh, this is a great pick at number 8. Number 203 overall. This is a great pick. He's got a lot of size, speed, length, athleticism. He's going to make an impact.
I like the player, Mark, and I like the pick. And that's where the bit comes from because, you know, every draft, it's like, oh, that's a great pick. It's a steal. That's a steal of the third round. You have no clue. I mean, you have no clue until the guy actually goes out there and plays football. And I wonder about the Javon Kinlaw pick when that happened for the Niners. Like, I want to see who among the Niners cognoscenti or all the reporters who were out there, who was the one who was like, dude, bad pick. I don't like the player and I don't like the pick. We don't do that. And so, yeah, Kuminga, good workout. But I'm more struck by the timing of,
yeah, it's interesting,
of the refuting of this narrative. So if, in fact, you didn't turn down $30 million, that tells me that you were never offered $30 million a year. And, yeah, I was surprised if that offer actually happened and they turned that down. That, to me, is a fireable offense for the agent. And so here we are. Kuminga might be forced to play for $7.9 million. So if you're the agent, yeah, of course you're going to come out and say that, even if it's true. And I don't know where the truth lies in this story. We've seen a variety of different reports, right?
Yeah.
But if you're the agent, of course you're going to come out and say, we didn't turn down $30 million because now your client might be making $8 million.
Yeah, it's not great. I will say, I believe Aaron Turner when he says no one on our side was turning down $30 million a year. That means, I'm with you, of course, that it was never offered. So then how do you explain what Anthony Slater reported last October? And Anthony Slater, as reliable of a reporter, especially on the Warriors, as there is out there. So I'm not saying Anthony Slater was wrong, just maybe the words in which he used to report this back then might not have been the best words. He said, again, the Warriors never upped their offer somewhere near the 30-ish million dollar per year range. Him saying offer, I think, has led to a lot of people to run with that as that was a concrete Kuminga and Aaron Turner and his whole camp, here is our offer. It includes, you know, whether it was 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever it was, $30 million AAV. Here is our offer. It's in an envelope. However they officially present these things, here it is. Here's our offer. Do you want it or no? And the Kuminga and his camp said no. No, that did not happen. At least that's what I believe. Because one, Dibs, I don't know why the Warriors, even last year, before everything that happened this season happened, why they would feel comfortable paying Kuminga $30 million a year. That made no sense to me even last year. And number two, what you said, if that offer is in front of Kuminga and his camp, how are you possibly saying no to that? So I can't believe it from either side. Okay, then how do we come to grips with the fact that Aaron Turner saying there was no $30 million offer and Slater was saying, well, there kind of was. The way that I interpret all of this, Dibs, is pretty simple. I think it's semantics, and I think there wasn't any official offer involved. This was maybe an exploratory conversation. It was something low-key. It was something simple. It was the very early stages of a negotiation, and maybe Kuminga and his camp went to Mike Dunleavy and said, Mike, we're looking for $35 million a year, something like that. Can we work with you there? And Mike goes, ooh, I don't know, JK. I mean, would you even consider $30 million a year? And JK and his camp, trying to run a hard bargain, say no, $35 million a year. And at that point, Dunleavy's like, man, if they won't even take 30, I don't even know if I want to give them 30. If they won't take 30, then there's no point in even negotiating. We're done here. We'll talk to you in the offseason. That's how I interpret this whole thing playing.
And I think you're probably right in the idea of an offer. And I've been in contract negotiations before, and until you get that piece of paper in front of you, that's an actual offer. Everything else that happens behind the scenes is a negotiation. And like you're talking about, if it was they want 35 and the thought is you wouldn't even take 30, and if they say no, that does not constitute an offer. That is just a conversation. And
exactly.
You get to that point of, whoa, you won't even take 30? All right, then we have to, you know, we have to figure this out, and you know, we'll just play this year, and then we'll get to the offseason, and we'll see where we are at that point. And Kuminga gets hurt, and you bring in Jimmy Butler, and he gets DNPs, and now 30 is not even anywhere near the conversation. And so, if you're the agent, I get it. You're going to say, we never turned down an offer of $30 million. That's true, but I wonder what your ask was. And if the report is true that you were asking for 35, and that I do believe, and if the Warriors were, you know, obviously much lower than that, why couldn't you come to some terms?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's no doubt that the Kuminga Warriors relationship took a turn for the worse this year, even before the offseason. So I think what the Warriors would be willing to pay Kuminga then is different than now, and maybe Kuminga's willingness to stay with the Warriors is different now than it was then. But even then, a $30 million offer feels absurd to me. And like you can, I guess before I get into that, Dibs, I want to remind you that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. The Warriors have made plenty of mistakes to get to this spot. Like, I see so many fans who say Kuminga's holding the Warriors hostage and he needs to get over himself, yada, yada, yada. And while there is some truth to that, the Warriors have a lot of blame themselves in order for them to get to this spot in the first place. They're not perfect in this situation. They're far from it. And they've made their fair share of mistakes, even outside of this whole Kuminga conversation. I generally think, though, when it comes to planning and financial strategy and being aware of cap rules and things that are coming down the line years from now, they tend to be pretty good at those things. I think the fact that we're just assuming, a lot of people are assuming, that they would have been willing to sign Kuminga to a multi-year deal worth $30 million per year, we know how bad that would look right now. I don't think the Warriors would have been willing to do that, knowing what this offseason was going to look like and knowing what the new CBA is.
Yes, but if you want to go back a full year, I do think it's fair to look at a scenario and say they might have actually done just that, because you sign him for 4-120, let's say, last offseason, and then this past year goes the way it goes anyway, where he starts to cook, he's got the ha-ha, he's not fitting perfectly, but he's showing you the ability he has. He gets hurt, he misses 31 games, you get Jimmy, he comes back, and he really doesn't fit now. He gets DNPs and the rest of it. Well, you could have gotten to a spot, if none of that happened, you sign him to 4-120, he goes out and he cooks, and he's got the ha-ha, but he doesn't really fit, and you get to the deadline, you could trade him. You could trade him for $30 million worth of other player, kind of like what you did with Jordan Poole. I know that wasn't a deadline, but...
I mean, he could have been the big piece in the Wiggins deal that became Butler.
Right, so you end up keeping Wiggins, yeah. And, you know, maybe it plays out differently. And if you have Kuminga making whatever he was making last year, about $7 million, he becomes less of a tradable asset as a contract, and he got hurt. So I do think a number of things made it so you can look at the Warriors and say, yeah, they kind of mucked up, but at the same time, certain things kind of broke against them. And the injury me was first and foremost, because if you could have gone back and signed Kuminga and you realize, man, he's not going to really fit, you could have done what you did with Jordan Poole and traded him and got something for him.
Yeah, you could have. 888-957-9570. Tim Kawakami coming up here in just a little bit. But first, time for a call. Devin is in San Francisco and wants to weigh in. Devin, what's up? You're on with Dibs and Grandy. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in. I have a Warriors assistant coach that's a friend of mine, and he actually had a conversation with Jonathan Kuminga about turning down this offer and about how much of a generational wealth thing this would be if he just, you know, signed this contract and then, you know, put in the work, got better, and then signed another contract later on down the road. This was before Jimmy Butler was in the cut. This was before any of those moves were even being made. And what's also funny about this is that Joe Lacob is a huge fan of Kuminga, and he's the one that drove for him to get drafted. Steve Kerr, if you remember, when he got hurt, when he came back, he didn't automatically insert him back into the lineup because he had fallen out of favor with the rest of the coaches. So, yeah, I just wanted to, you know, put in that input and, you know.
Yeah, Devin, real quick, Devin, you said you have a friend who's an assistant coach on the Warriors?
Yes, he was an assistant coach last year.
Can you tell us who or no?
I don't know if he wants me to put his business out there, so I'm going to keep that anonymous. But he's a former player, and he was an assistant coach last year as well.
All right, Devin, appreciate the call. I mean, I guess more conflicting reports. I don't know if you believe Devin or not, Dibs, but, I mean, I have a hard time believing it. I'll just put it that way.
And it is a lot of just semantics on an offer or conversations or whatever it is. I do believe that if Jonathan Kuminga was willing to accept, I don't know, less than $30 million, if he was able to last offseason accept, even if it was 4 years and $90 million, let's just put that out there as a ballpark. If the Warriors were thinking, you know, we'll give you $22.5 million average annual per year over four, would you do that, Kuminga? And if that was going to be the offer, that would be a no from their side. And now here we are a year later, and he's staring down the barrel of either 7.9 qualifying offer or a shorter term deal that may not even be, you know, $22.5 million average annual. Feels like that market has plummeted, and I can't help but think about the Draymond Green comments that he made, and wasn't about Jonathan Kuminga. Believe me, it wasn't about JK. All y'all out there thinking that it was, but it was about people in Jonathan Kuminga's situation.
No doubt.
Among that is Jonathan Kuminga.
Indeed. Our conversation with Tim Kawakami coming up in just a minute, but before we do that, let's wrap up real quick with one more call, and we got more time for your Warrior calls once we wrap with Tim Kawakami. But let's get one more in here right now. Tom in Sonoma is up next. Tom, what's up? What do you got for us?
Hey, Grandy. Hey, Dibs. How you doing, man? Hey, this whole scenario is a nightmare. The worst draft we've ever had. Kuminga is hard-headed. If you would have listened to the coach, it's his last year, man. You got to come out and get your money. He didn't come out and get his money. I believe it.
Oh, sorry, Tom. Your phone broke up on us there. If you want to, give us a call back when you're in a better spot. Maybe we're going to chat with Tim Kawakami here in just a sec, but maybe give us a call in another 20 minutes and we can get your thoughts there. There is a little bit more on this Kuminga situation, Dibs, that we are going to get to in a little bit. Shams Charania. We heard a bit of what he said. He had more to say. Also, Anthony Slater said something a little bit about Kuminga plus some other stuff. We'll let you hear about that coming up as well, because, I mean, not a whole lot has happened, Dibs, but at least we had a couple of updates. Essentially, the updates are nothing is new, but we did get the updates. It's better than nothing, I guess.
Yeah, and the update is the agent sent out a tweet yesterday, and the player is in Miami working out today, and Shams Charania was there to see it.
And
so
it was a good workout.
It was a good workout.
Yeah, really good.
I was happy to hear that it was a good workout.
I think it upped his market. Maybe now they're going to get a trade done because some other team saw the workout.
No doubt. Or
they're just taking Shams' word for it.
They could. But the fact that Shams was there, he was either in the neighborhood and heard the squeak of a sneaker and thought, oh, I'll just duck my head in here. Or the agent was like, hey, Shams, why don't you come on out and see my guy JK, and you could talk about how you saw JK.
I would guess that's how it went.
Of course. And so, you know, you go from the agent refuting a report about them turning down $30 million, and the very next day, Shams is in the building and talking about it being a good workout and how, you know, Jonathan Kuminga's not. He's relaxed. He's relaxed. He's not worried at all about it. He's going to take his time.
Yeah.
That is the agent telling the Warriors, all right, Warriors.
Ball's in your court.
You want Horford? You want Melton? You want other things to get done? And it all has to wait for us? Oh, we're chilling.
Yeah.
We're chilling with Shams in Miami.
So we'll get back to that in just a little bit. But first, our conversation with Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard. A great conversation with Kyle Shanahan earlier this week on the TK Show. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts, including on the free Odyssey app. But Tim Kawakami joining us here on Willard and Dibs. Tim, how's it been in Santa Clara at 49ers training camp?
Yeah, not too bad. I wasn't down there today. I was there yesterday, of course, and the day before that to the Shanahan Lynch presser, and then talked to Kyle afterwards. You know, the weather's been fine, a little mild, actually not too hot. And, you know, there's some energy there. There's a lot of young players. That's what strikes you, first thing. There's just a lot of young bodies out there, a few less familiar faces, but then some of the familiar faces are out there too. But more than anything, you see Mikael Williams, you see Nick Martin, you see, you know, CJ West, you see all these guys. It's different. There's a different energy to it when you see younger players out there. Obviously, they have to prove themselves, though.
Yeah, they do. And I mentioned your conversation with Kyle Shanahan. It's available again on the TK Show. I'm curious what you thought was the most intriguing thing that Kyle told you. If you could just point to a single thing that you heard from him, what would that be?
I guess so. The big picture, we know what happened in the offseason. We know all the players that they lost or discarded. And for the first time, Shanahan, and I've been critical of it, and I'll still be critical of some of it, but he really put it together for me. Like, this is what they were looking at. And I had not heard them say this like this. They're basically starting another three-year cycle like they started in 2018. 2017, he and Lynch take over, and they just got to redo everything. And they didn't really think of their era starting until 18 when they started accumulating some players they really could use, you know, build foundational players. And that launched this run from then till, let's go to the 2023 season when they get the Super Bowl again. And then it kind of busts up again in 2024 last year for various reasons. They kind of do a roster payroll cleanse. And this, to them, is the year one of a new three-year cycle, and the players that were no longer on the team, in their minds, their logic would not have helped them in year two or year three of this cycle. And maybe you don't get the Super Bowl this year, but you get a shot at doing it in year two, year three. That really made sense to me, and maybe it was logical if you looked at it, but as it was happening, I didn't feel it quite that logical, that structural. And for Shanahan to get it, you know, put it down that clearly, I think he and Lynch kind of figured it out as go. I don't think this was exactly the plan to start this offseason, at least to do it as dramatically as they did. You know, Deebo Samuel, Talano Hufanga, Jalen Moore, Aaron Banks, and we know the names, Jordan Mason, Bing, 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 all these guys, Deebo Samuel. But I think the philosophy of it, I had not really felt football-wise. And to be sitting across from Shanahan, asking him about it, and him spelling it out, that he really felt it coming in the middle of the 2023 season, not last season when it all fall apart. He felt like coming in 2023, they're still going to go try to do it again in 2024 because they didn't have to pay Purdy till this year. But he felt it kind of loosening then, And last year kind of was the disruption year, and this is now year one of a new three-year cycle, or they're hoping more than 3 years. That was really interesting to me.
And when you look at this three-year cycle, Tim, and you start to take a look at the draft where five guys were drafted on defense, and you bring back Robert Saleh, and you bring in Gus Bradley, a couple of veteran defensive minds, do you think that that is where Kyle Shanahan is looking to start? You've got an offense that already had some drafted players last year. Is it more about the defense this year that needs to be a part of that three-year cycle?
Yeah, I think so. That's where the restart really is, defensive line for sure. And we know how much, you know, Shanahan and Lynch value the defensive line. One of the reasons they wanted this job was because they had Armstead and Buckner already there. Now you have Bosa as kind of the foundational piece, and you got to figure out who else is around that. And, yeah, I do think the refresh, the redo is mostly on defense, and he's very comfortable with Robert Saleh doing it because Saleh did it in 17 and 18 because that was not a great defense, as we know, even with Buckner and Armstead. They had to piece it together. They had to add people who could play that system. Richard Sherman was a big part of it. There were other players who were big parts of it. But, yeah, the big redo, you know, where did the team really fall apart last year? It was on the defense. It was a, you know, run defense, which is what all defenses pride themselves on, fell apart. They had guys who were not doing the job or they were hurt. And if just logically on offense, they do have Brock Purdy as a holdover. And, you know, you imagine at 25, 26, he's only getting better. You've just paid him a whole lot of money. You still have Trent Williams. You still have George Kittle. You still have, you know, Christian McCaffrey. So they should be okay on offense, at least with the quarterback for sure, and build it out from there. On defense, you got to redo it. But this has got to happen in camp. Like, this is what they're doing, is figuring out what they got on defense and figuring out where to put it. And I agree. This is the you need the talent there. You can't just do it with stray pieces. You got to do it with the right people, and they have picked the right people. I think they're really talented. I mean, again, it's noticeable. Mykal Williams and Alfred Collins, 2 6-foot-5 guys on defensive line, are noticeable. You see them, and other people see them. You kind of congregate over there because there's so much size and so much speed. Can they stay healthy? Can they do it in real games? Can they stop the running back on 3rd and 1? We don't know that, but they got a shot at it with these guys, and I think that's what Shanahan feels.
Tim Kawakami with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard. You can hear his podcast, The TK Show. It includes a conversation with Kyle Shanahan earlier this week. You mentioned defense, obviously more questions than the offense, but the position group on offense that does have some questions is the wide receiver room. Of course, Ayuk coming back from his rough knee injury. You got a minor hamstring injury still with Ricky Pearsall. Maybe he comes off and he practices in full coming up on Sunday. But the other question is Juwan Jennings, who is looking for a contract, reworked contract, more money, more incentives, whatever it is. But he's been out there and practicing, and it's difficult for me to not think back to how this went down last year with Ayuk, who was a hold-in. How do you think this gets resolved, and is it easier for the Niners to maybe give Juwan what he wants, considering he's at practice and he's actually practicing on the field?
Absolutely. You know, I don't think anybody wanted a replay of the Ayuk thing. It was just so awkward for everybody. I think Shanahan even made a quick reference to it when we're talking about Purdy, saying, you know, some guys don't even want to listen to a number till after camp starts. And that's kind of Ayuk. Like, the frustration on some part of the 49ers with Ayuk was he's making all this noise and he hasn't even given us a number. Like, we don't even know what the number is. That's the 49ers side. I would imagine the Ayuk side might argue differently, but it was just complete at odds with Ayuk all the way through camp, all the way to the eve of the season. And we know he did not start off very well after missing all of camp. Juwan Jennings is not doing it now. Different situation. He's not a, you know, first receiver. Probably he is right now, just given the absence they've had, but more of a, you know, complimentary, very solid first down maker, kind of a tough guy receiver, which means he's very valuable. But I think him reporting, him practicing, him making plays, him being there with Purdy makes it a lot easier for the 49ers. I say, like, there's a way to solve this. We know it's not going to be $20 million a year. That's not likely to happen. But they can guarantee him some money next year. They can make this a three-year deal. They can jump up his salary. It's not that hard when the vibes are good. And Ayuk got his money last year, right? He got his money. It just happened in a very, very rough way. And I don't think anybody wanted to duplicate that. And I'll just say, if Jennings was holding in right now, I think 49ers might treat this very, very differently than they did with IU. But they knew he wasn't. They like him. He likes them. This is where he should be. You just got to find a number where it works. You know, it could be like, you know, bump him up to $15 million this year from 7.5. Like that, it isn't. They have the money to do it. He is going to be worth it. And maybe you guarantee him some of that money next year. And I just think there's a way to do this. And I think he is going down that path to proving what they already think of him, that they love him and they want him on this team and they'll reward him.
And I was thinking the same thing, Tim. Like, I thought that this almost helped his leverage, the fact that he's being a stand-up guy and he's not going about it with a hold-in or a hold-out, and he's out there trying to lead a group that, let's be fair, I mean, this is a very unproven group. And if you look around the wide receiver room right now with Juwan there, who else do you have that you can even count on who might be healthy and ready to go?
It's a Marcus Robinson, but who made some plays in day one, but we know he might be suspended. Likely he's going to be suspended for the start of the season. So then you start knocking down. Vicky Pearsall's not practicing yet with a hamstring. Jacob Cowing, you know, had a hamstring pull yesterday, so he'll be out for a while. You really start knocking down the line. It gets to be fourth-round pick Jordan Watkins, who actually looks pretty good out there. We know that Shanahan is tough on rookie receivers. It's hard to tell. Is he going to stay healthy? All the questions we ask everybody, but he might be getting some time out there, guys. He might be their third wideout to start the season. No, that's pending a DeMarcus Robinson suspension, and we don't know where Ricky Pearsall is going to be. But, man, if I had to say who might be their, you know, first receiver coming off the bench, you know, who isn't starting, it might be Jordan Watkins. Now, that is a little scary, I'm sure, for the 49ers again, because he's a rookie. You just don't know if he can do it. But that's how thin they are right now. They find a receiver, they find another, you know, like they're signing receivers, but I think it's mostly just for camp reps. I don't think they're going to be counting on these guys, but who knows, you know, if another receiver or two goes down, it could get to be, it's already pretty desperate, you know, pending the DeMarcus Robinson situation. It could get very, very desperate because you never know who's going to, you know, who's going to be healthy, who's going to be not. And I'll just say, just the way they're talking, I don't think Brandon Ayuk is going to be suiting up, let's just say, put pads on for quite some time. I would not expect him to practice in training camp. I would not expect him to be in the preseason games. I would not expect him to be available for like at least week 1, 2, 3. I think we're talking October maybe for Ayuk and maybe even a little bit beyond that.
Tim, I'm curious. You were talking about how Shanahan walked you through kind of their plan for this offseason and what it means for this year and the opening of a new 3-year window. I think from the outside, there's a lot of opinions that this is a team that is now rebuilding, and maybe this is somewhat of a, not necessarily a lost year, but a year potentially before a year. What would you say to someone who thinks that this is a rebuilding team right now? The way that I feel, I mean, it's pretty difficult to rebuild when you have that big of a contract. You just hand it over to a starting quarterback. What would you say to someone who says this is a rebuilding team right now?
Yeah, in some ways, it's clearly not a total rebuild. As you mentioned, Purdy, Kittle, Trent Williams, McCaffrey, like they're Bosa, like they've got players who are not rebuilding players, right? They are not. They're middle of their careers, big money, top of the payroll guys. I would say that they retooled, and given this easy schedule, now I don't know if the schedule was part of their factoring. I would have gone the other way, saying we got this easy schedule. We can go 15-2. We keep everybody. That's a pathway to the Super Bowl. They did not do that. And by the way, the Super Bowl is at Levi Stadium. I would have thought that might have had something to do. They didn't do it. Okay, I expressed my opinion on that. But they've got such an easy schedule that even getting rid of all these solid players and possibly risking some, you know, some very thin position groups, and you're counting on young players who may or may not be good or may not stay healthy, they still might win 11 games, guys. Like, this is a really easy schedule. It's the easiest schedule I've ever seen the 49ers have. You're playing the NFC South, not exactly filled with powerful teams, and the AFC South, not exactly filled with powerful teams. This is set up for them to win 10 games, I think. Like, it would be really crazy for them not to win 10 games, unless Purdy gets hurt or Bosa gets hurt. You know, obviously, those are pending those things. If you can say that, win 10-11, get a wild card spot, maybe even threaten for the division, they're going to say we were not rebuilding. You know, we just kind of reset this. Now, I think we'll know in our own minds they are rebuilding parts of this team. But if they hit on their defensive draft picks, if Purdy is solid, if McCaffrey stays healthy, they should be all right. And it won't be like this complete desolation of talent. They still have talent. They looked terrible last year, but that's when a lot of people got hurt. I think they're good enough to be able to say, hey, it was a reset, and then when our young players are a little older, in a year or two, it will look like 2019 looked like. I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm saying I can understand that that's their argument. Now let's see if they're right.
Yeah, the opponents had a winning percentage of 415 last year, Tim, which is,
yeah.
I mean, dramatically poorer than what it was the year before when their opponents had a winning percentage of about 500, but they went on to win almost 60% of their games and all the rest disadvantage they had. So I'm kind of with you. They could maybe even sleepwalk their way into 10 wins. I want to get your thoughts on the Jonathan Kuminga. I don't even know if it's a saga. I don't even know what it is, Tim. Here we are in late July, and he's yet to really come out and have resolution. And his agent yesterday on social media said, our camp, and I love the use of camp, but their camp never turned down $30 million a year. Where are we with the Kuminga conundrum, as Grandy calls it?
Yeah, it continues. The conundrum continues. It's a stuck place right now, is because the Warriors aren't going to pay him $30 million a year because over a five-year deal. I don't know that it was ever offered. I know it was reported it was offered. I don't think it was, but, you know, something in that ballpark. But he doesn't fit that now because they can't for sure know where he's fits with the Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry situation. But they want to maintain his value, so they're not, you know, they want to, if someone wants to trade for him, that's fine, but you have to meet what the Warriors want for him. And it's not exactly been blockbuster because, again, they can match any contract offer that he receives. Nobody has the cap space to just sign him out, right? This is a tricky situation. It's been proven to be tricky. If Kuminga had an incredible market, I think he would have been traded by now. If the Warriors were absolutely right and he wasn't worth very much, I think he would have come back on a very short-term deal by now at a lower number. It's something in the middle. In the middle, it gets tricky. So I think, you know, they're just going to have to play it out and play it. I don't know when there's an end to this, but as I said, I think going into it, and maybe going into it, I thought that he was going to be traded. I thought there would be a hotter market for him. There just wasn't. So now that there isn't much of a market that we can tell, maybe it'll heat up again. He's a very talented player. But the way it looks like, I've been saying for like a month now, like I would guess he's coming back on a short-term deal. And then maybe look to be traded, because I think he wants to be on another team. I think he does. And I think the Warriors have different opinions on this if you ask different members, but I think the consensus probably is if he would be better off be traded if they could get something back for him. That just isn't the situation right now. So you might have to wait into January or February before you can do the ideal situation. That's just the clunkiness of what this is. And maybe if he comes back on a multi-year deal that isn't breaking the bank, he plays great for the Warriors, and maybe that changes the dynamic. That is entirely possible. I think they are certainly open to that. I think Kuminga is partially open to that, but also I think he suspects that it will not turn out great for him with the Warriors. He's seen it over 4 years where he goes in the lineup and out, in the lineup and out. And I have agreed with Steve Kerr at the end. Like if he doesn't fit with Jimmy Butler, exactly, and it isn't quite fitting with Steph Curry, then what are you going to do? What are you just going to force him out there? I would not say that that's the right move. That's not even the right mentality. So it feels like there's a long, extended, drawn-out conundrum, all these words, that should end up with him maybe signing a shorter-term deal with the Warriors that allows them to be traded in January and February, and they go find a deal at that point. It'll be easier to do at that point is what I'll say. This has just been tricky because the restricted free agency, there's no contracted deal. They got to figure out the contract. Then you got to figure out a trade. And I think, you know, most of us predicted this would get complicated. It's been complicated, and that's why it's been delayed.
Interesting. Good stuff, Tim. We appreciate your time as always, and we'll keep our eye on the SF Standard and the TK Show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
That was Tim Kawakami with us earlier today here on Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you a lot on the Niners, and then there at the very tail end, just an update from Tim's perspective on the Jonathan Kuminga situation. And Dibs, he seems to think, and I think this is the logical conclusion to draw, given how drawn out this whole process has been, and who knows how much longer it's going to continue to be drawn out. It seems more and more likely that the result might just be Kuminga extends with the Warriors, maybe with the wink, wink, that he'll try to be traded potentially before the February deadline.
Potentially, and it might be a three-year deal, 2 years plus a third-year player option. It might be 2 years with the same construct. I don't think it'll be much more than that. If it is a sign and trade, it has to be a minimum of 3 years. And feels like, even though you've seen reports that Sacramento is still buzzing around and Phoenix has been another one that is reportedly still interested in Jonathan Kuminga, ultimately, he would have to agree to sign a contract in order to be traded to those teams. I don't think that they can just trade him and have him then sign with a new team. It would have to be a true sign and trade where you give him an actual offer and say, all right, here are the contract terms, and Phoenix is going to be the one to pay you, but it's 3 years and, you know, $48 million. It's $16 million a year. And he might look at that and go, no. I don't want to play for $16 million a year and give up his ability to refuse a trade if he plays on the qualifying offer.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of unique circumstances that go into this and why it's more difficult than a normal trade, why it's more difficult than a normal free agent is that you have to have both parties agree. And not just the Warriors and Kuminga, that is one aspect of it. But why just the normal extension is more likely is because in the result or in the event of a sign-in trade, you need three parties to agree. Kuminga has to agree to the deal that the team that is acquiring him wants to give him, whether it's, you know, you lay out $16 million a year, maybe somebody will offer $22 million a year, whatever it is. Kuminga has to agree to whatever deal that team is willing to pay. But then the Warriors have to agree with whatever team is acquiring him for the return back to the Warriors. Those are two things that are not easy to get done. And, oh, by the way, on top of that, you have to find a way to make the money work both ways. And it's an extremely difficult process to make the money work. And it's not even worth bringing up all of the minute details in terms of how that works. And, you know, you can take 50% back, but it's honestly actually a little bit more than 50% because of the salary cap matching process and the money matching numbers. And it's all you need to know is that it's really, really difficult. So with all that in mind, you add in the fact that it is a relatively dry market for Kuminga. It does seem like the likeliest scenario at this point is that he probably signs, you know, a 2-3 year deal with the Warriors for somewhere between, I don't know, $15 to $20 million. And then we'll see what happens in the first half of the year. But the updates from people in the know today, Dibs. First, Shams Charania, ESPN on NBA Today. We played this one earlier, but I want to play it again. Shams Charania, he said he spoke to Kuminga today. Here's Shams' update on the Kuminga situation.
The Warriors' entire offseason has been essentially on pause for one player, and that's the restricted free agent Jonathan Kuminga, and they have wanted to figure out his situation before making their other offseason moves. And so I saw Jonathan Kuminga this morning at a workout in Miami. He's in good spirits. He had a good workout. He did tell me, though, that he is in absolutely no rush on doing a deal with the Warriors right now, and he's not accepting their current offers. He added that he wants to continue to explore options with his agent, Aaron Turner, whether that's continuing conversations with the Warriors, but also sign and trade options that are available to him in the marketplace.
Okay, there's update one from Shams, but there is more, Dibs. Here's more Shams on NBA Today on ESPN, something that you were just talking about, the two teams that have made offers to the Warriors for Kuminga. Here's Shams.
I'm told the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings are two teams that have made concrete offers with the Warriors over the last week or so. They're two of the more aggressive teams with Kuminga, and they're also offering him an opportunity for significant minutes, a starting caliber role in their lineup, and those are two things that he wants more than anything. So where this is at, Vanessa, is the Warriors do not want anything, though, that is available to them, is being offered to them in sign and trades. And on the other hand, with Jonathan Kuminga, he is not ready to move forward with taking any of the Warriors' current offers. He's not in a hurry to do a deal there yet. And so 24 days into the offseason, it's a staring contest between these two sides that could continue much longer than just this month. And so we're nearing August and still no Warriors move so far this offseason.
Okay, Dibs, so let me get this straight. The update from Shams, who saw Kuminga in person today at a great workout down in Miami.
Great workout.
The update is, one, Kuminga's not in a rush to get this thing figured out. Kuminga doesn't like any of the Warriors' offers, and the Warriors don't like any of the offers from the teams that have actually made an offer to the Warriors for Kuminga, the Suns and the Kings. Those are the updates. So, in other words, no update.
Well, the update is that...
nothing new.
Well, he's working out and he's looking good. And the other update is that he is in no rush to accept an offer from the Warriors that he doesn't think is commensurate with how good he sees himself. And so that is a little bit of a sticking point. The only thing that I think leans in the Warriors' favor is the idea that if Al Horford is already done and it's been a verbal and it's like, okay, when we get this taken care of, you're going to have the paperwork within moments and you can sign it. Or D'Anthony Melton, the same thing. If those deals are already in place on the back burner and they're just waiting, then I'm not as concerned about the Warriors having to, you know, wait this out and sweat through it. But it's pretty clear from that report that Jonathan Kuminga sees his situation as one that he can kind of control. He can control the timeline of it.
Yes.
And, you know, he wants to get a lot of money and he wants to be a big part of a team and their offense. And neither one of those things seems to exist in Golden State.
That is Kuminga's power. And just that he doesn't have to agree to anything. He can just drag this out. And to your point, the Warriors might be willing to let it drag out because they have some handshake agreements in place. But the longer that this goes, the more uneasy that might be for both the Warriors and for the players that have potentially, you know, agreed in principle to a deal with the Warriors, but it has not become official and they have not officially signed a contract. Because you will get to a point where you feel like you got to let something happen. I've said before, and I'll explain it again, I think the reason why nothing has happened for the Warriors yet isn't because they can't, like, physically do it. Like, contractually, they can. Like, they can sign Horford today, they could sign Melton today, they could sign GP2 today, they could sign Seth Curry today. They could sign all those guys today. But if you use the taxpayer mid-level on Horford or on whoever or a portion of it or whatever, that hard caps you at the second apron. If you have a hard cap at the second apron, there becomes a theoretical reality where some team could clear cap space and offer Kuminga enough money that the Warriors physically can't match, and then he walks away for nothing, and there's nothing the Warriors can do about it. They want to avoid that theoretical situation becoming reality. So they're holding off on things. But I don't want anybody to think that Kuminga's willingness to wait is making it impossible for the Warriors to do stuff. They could do all that stuff. They have just chosen to figure out the Kuminga thing first for whatever reason, and then they're going to deal with everything else after. There might come a point when Horford realizes, you know what, this isn't working. I'm waiting too long. I'm just going to retire or whatever it is. And then it might backfire on them.
It might.
But as of right now, if you have handshake agreements in place, what is the harm in waiting?
There's no harm. And the other piece is Gary Payton II. We haven't yet seen anything develop with GP2 as far as, you know, him getting offers or him maybe being somebody who moves on. The initial report was, oh, he won't be back, but now he's not anywhere. So you still have GP2 out there as a possibility who you could add at some later date in this offseason, as the offseason will drag into August. Yep. And likely into September. And I know next month the official NBA schedule comes out. That's really the next big thing that happens in the NBA, is the schedule will drop and then you get to September and camp will open, and from there we get ready for the year.
I got a question that came in on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. The 408 asks, is it true that you can't trade anyone for 6 months after you extend them? 408, we remember this for the Markkanen situation. Yep. Last year. That was specific to that situation. Markkanen got extended in Utah, could not be traded for 6 months, and once that deadline, it was like August 12th or whatever it was last year, once that deadline passed, the Warriors could not theoretically acquire him at the trade deadline anymore because he would not have been eligible to be traded. That's not the case with Kuminga. It's only a three-month timeline. So the Warriors can sign Kuminga really at any point before the season begins, and he would be eligible to be traded. So there is not that artificial artificial deadline in place for him and the Warriors in this situation. We got some calls that we want to get to on the Warriors, but Dibs, we do have some breaking news out of Major League Baseball.
Oh.
We don't need the sounder. This is not Giants related, but this is the first trade, first relatively big trade within the deadline area. We are a week away from the deadline. The Devers trade, of course, was over a month ago. That's not really a deadline deal. This is somewhat of a deadline deal. The Seattle Mariners are acquiring first baseman Josh Naylor from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Naylor, I mean, he's hitting .292 so far this year, has 11 home runs, 30 home runs, and 100 RBIs last year in Cleveland. A bat on the move, a big bat on the move, but maybe the confirmation that we got from this move, Dibs, is that the D-backs will indeed be sellers, and Eugenio Suarez is probably the biggest prize out there on the market this year. And this signals, I would imagine, that Suarez will also be traded before the week is up.
On the move, yep. And, you know, we now have inside of 7 days. I believe it's next Thursday at 3 o'clock
Correct.
Is when the deadline will hit. I don't know if the Giants will be players in the Suarez market. And honestly, the fact that the D-backs are now looking at, you know, maybe punting on the year, for me, that doesn't really change the Giants' calculus about,
no.
you know, their playoff odds. I don't think the D-backs were a team you really were looking at as competition. It's probably, you know, the Padres and the Mets or Phillies and, you know, a couple of other teams around the National League. There aren't a bunch of teams that you're competing with, but Arizona was not one of them.
Yes. The Diamondbacks kind of on the heels of the Giants, but they haven't been playing a lot of good baseball of late. They decide to sell. They have a lot of pieces that can bring them something back. Eugenio Suarez, third baseman who's near the league leaders in home runs. They just traded Josh Naylor. Who knows what they do with their pitching? I mean, Zach Gallen, could he be on the move? Merrill Kelly, another pitcher, he might be on the move. The D-backs, they might be some of the biggest sellers in terms of guys that could actually help postseason hopefuls. So we'll keep an eye on the Diamondbacks, not necessarily for competing with the Giants in the standings, but just in terms of who they trade some of those pieces to, because that could potentially impact the Giants in a different way. If a different team competing for a wild card spot gains some talent from the D-backs, that might in turn hurt the Giants. We'll get back to the Warriors after this quick break. We got BPA on the line, Dibs. We'll get to BPA.
All right.
When we come back. Warriors, Kuminga updates, not a whole lot new. We will let you hear what Anthony Slater had to say on ESPN about that. Plus an interesting nugget about some of the other free agents the Warriors are tied to. We'll get to that when we come back. We're sponsored by Honda of Vallejo. It's Dibs and Grandy with you on Willard and Dibs, back to wrap things up next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 10 minutes left here on a Thursday. It's Dibs and Grandy with you on Willard and Dibs. Willard out. Out tomorrow as well. He'll be back on Monday here on Willard and Dibs. Wrapping things up. Day number two in Niners training camp. Dibs has come and gone. They've got one more normal practice day until they put the pads on. They'll practice tomorrow. They'll be off Saturday and then pads on Sunday.
Ooh, exciting.
We're
getting there. Just stay healthy. I mean, the Justin Fields one today where he had a dislocated toe. Not the big toe, which is good. One of the lesser toes.
Do we know which lesser toe?
I'm not sure, but, you know, the big toe is obviously called the big toe for a reason. It's the big one, the big fella. The other four, I don't know how you would rank your toes. I'm told the pinky toe is super critical. My sister, actually, her pinky toe is tucked under her foot in a botched surgery. But,
I don't know if that's worth a
shout out to Kaner. She got about 4.6 toes, I would say. That thing's not quite a legit toe, but the fact that he had a dislocated toe by getting stepped on and he had to be carted off the field.
Crazy.
Super crazy.
Yeah.
And so I just saw the headline, Justin Fields carted off, and I thought,
oh no.
Oh, Casey Schmidt, no.
Yep.
And you look, it's like he got stepped on, dislocated toe, carted off. Okay.
He'll be fine.
He's fine, but just stay healthy, Niners. I mean, you're not even in the pads yet, and Pearsall is on the pup, can't perform, and Jacob Cowing tweaked a hammy within the first like hour of the first practice. Like, what are we doing here?
No pads and not even running routes against anybody else. He was just running
against air,
and he pulled his hammy.
Right. So just stay healthy, get into September and be healthy. And the official start of preseason football is in 1 week, Grandy.
1 week from right now,
the
there
Hall of
will
Fame
be football
game,
on.
Yes.
NFL football will be on.
Yeah, I mean, yes, NFL football in quotes, on a patently dangerous field in Dayton, Ohio, with the majority of those players actually not being NFL players, but they're going to be allowed to run around in NFL uniforms, which is kind of cool.
This is the last Thursday that we won't have NFL football.
Okay.
To some degree.
Until... like, how deep does the Thursday schedule go? Does it go all the way through the last? Is there one in the last week?
I don't know. Maybe not the last week. Maybe second to last week.
Okay. Yeah.
Or through the almost the entire regular season. This is the last Thursday without some kind of NFL football, Dibs.
And you know what that means, right? It's time to fade the Dibber coming up.
That's
I will
a good
give
point.
You my Hall
Should
of
we?
Fame game lock
yes.
next Thursday.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Let's go.
I'm so excited.
Thursday night football. A bunch of guys who will never make the league will be on display in Dayton, Ohio.
Looking forward to it. Canton, not Dayton.
Hey, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
whatever. One of those places
in Ohio. If you're not Cincinnati or Cleveland or Columbus, what are you, Ohio?
That's a good point.
You know.
Anyways, that's coming up in a week. We've been talking a lot of Niners today of late. A little more on the Warriors because there has been a little bit of new information coming in. As it relates to Kuminga, Shams Charania said Kuminga had a great workout today, but also that Kuminga's in no rush to get a resolution. Also that the Warriors have not, clearly, no deal has been made, have not liked any of the offers they've gotten from other teams for Kuminga, and Kuminga does not like the offers the Warriors have been giving Kuminga himself. We will hear from Anthony Slater with something new, but first let's go out to the phone lines. 888-957-9570. Brian in Palo Alto, BPA, joins us. It's Dibs and Grandy. BPA, what do you got?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Brian, how you doing, kid?
Yeah, I think, you know, a tough offseason for Joe Lacob, in my take. And I don't blame Kerr. I don't blame Kuminga. They should have moved off Kuminga a long time ago when they had opportunities to get good players in return. It's just an egregiously incompetent management of an asset, period. And it's permanent record time here for a guy that, you know, is holding up their entire offseason, in which they have a two-year window. They have done nothing. And this guy has mucked up the works and his agent. And granted, he is one of the most incompetent agents, I think, really in the last decade of NBA basketball, of a guy that's given pretty bad advice to his client. But they should have moved off him a long time ago. At that last trade deadline, but it's unfortunate. It really is, you know. And I don't know that this offseason can be salvaged, which basically means I would say that's kind of the end of the Curry run, and it will be at the hands of Joe Lacob, Jonathan Kuminga, and his agent. And that's sad because they really they don't deserve it.
What could salvage it right now, B? Before we let you go, I mean, if they were able to keep Kuminga or get something for Kuminga and bring in Horford and Melton, would that, quote, salvage it, or is that already too far down the road for you?
I don't think a lot of Warrior fans want Kuminga back at this point. I think it would be real tough to bring him back. You know, you can't bring him back at a qualifying offer because now you're burning, you know, $7-8 million of the cap for a guy that's almost basically guaranteed to leave the next season. So you can't prioritize or build around him or any of that kind of stuff. So I don't see the logic of giving him $20 to $25 million a year when any team can sign him right now to an offer sheet. I don't even think the Warriors would match. And the way the league has valued him, the best we can come up with is Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen. Like, I think, you know, and he talked about, you know, these Kuminga stands on Twitter who are just truly toxic, by the way. They value Kuminga over Curry and Kerr and everything else. And that we see how he's valued around the league now. Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal on the Kings. I don't even know the Kings guys that they're offering up. But, Sarge. And the rookie, he was, I think, one of the worst rookies in the league last year. So
Devin Carter.
Yeah. I don't know that it can be salvaged. They mismanaged this asset so badly, and you know, I don't know how you fix it now. No.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too, Brian. Thanks for the call. The one thing that BPA said that's interesting is he doesn't even think the Warriors would match an offer sheet that Kuminga might sign with a different team. He might be wrong there. Let's listen to Anthony Slater, who was also on NBA Today on ESPN earlier today. First, you will hear some of the names the Warriors have been linked to, and then you'll hear an update on Kuminga. Here is Slater.
All signs point to Al Horford. They're certainly interested in him. I would say if they are not able to get that done, if Horford, who you hear is also mulling retirement, if he's not on the roster next year, it's a big miss by the Warriors because that's in their plans. They need a stretch five. They're also looking for perimeter defense. There is mutual interest in a reunion with D'Anthony Melton, who played only 6 games for them last year before he tore an ACL, but it was a really good fit. Steph Curry likes him. And another, they want some extra shooting. Another name I'm hearing with mutual interest, Seth Curry, actually, as a potential bench shooting option with a family tie. And then, you know, the other thing they need is they need youth, they need athleticism, and they need scoring. And Jonathan Kuminga fits that. It's clear Jonathan Kuminga is in their plans, but I'm not sure the Warriors are in Kuminga's plans, and that's what's still trying to get sorted out.
Okay, two things there. Slater says Horford, Melton, and Seth Curry have mutual interest between them and the Warriors. Seth Curry, I know we've heard rumors before, but now it is being described as a mutual interest. Interesting. And the other thing, and this is why I said Brian might be wrong in saying that the Warriors wouldn't want to match any offer sheet Kuminga signs. Slater says there pretty strongly Kuminga is in the Warriors' plans, but the Warriors might not be in Kuminga's plans, meaning the Warriors have interest in bringing him back, but Kuminga might not want to come back.
And he won't want to come back, especially for $7.9 million. And if he has to play the role that he has played, I don't think that he would want to come back and do that. But yeah, he may not have a great amount of other options. And I do kind of side with BPA, what he talked about with Kuminga's agent. Whatever the offer was or wasn't last offseason, and I do believe him that there wasn't an offer there for $30 million, but whatever happened between then and now, the offer that's out there now is a lot less than what they could have gotten last offseason, and that to me becomes a pretty fireable offense.
There's been mismanagement on both sides of this, the Warriors and Kuminga side. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and the Kuminga side is, you know, you have a guy representing you. He's supposed to be able to read the market and go out there and get you your chicken.
Yep. And the Warriors side, you did not want to part with Kuminga as part of a deal that might have brought you Pascal Siakam.
Right.
2 years ago now. Well, a year and a half ago at this point. So, not a good look, really, on either side. The larger picture is no update, no news. There is nothing imminent, it seems. Another day has passed, and no Kuminga resolution. Dibs, it's all the time we have today. We got one more show together before Willard comes back. Talk to you tomorrow, huh?
Yeah, maybe Kuminga signs between now and then. I'm sorry. That's just nonsense.
I hope so, but probably not.
We got baseball tomorrow, and we got another day of Niners camp to kick around.
Yes, we do. That's coming up tomorrow. Also, what's coming up next here on 95.7 The Game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It's Best of the Game, an hour of 95.7 The Game's best content from the day. And what's coming up is the crossover, Steiny and Evan, Dibs and myself, and then Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard breaking down Niners training camp. That's what's coming up. For Dibs, for Lucas, for Ken, I'm Mark Grandy. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk tomorrow on 95.7 The Game.